In the last few weeks of gospel readings throughout the book of Matthew, we've heard a big chunk of the beginning of Jesus' story. We've heard about Jesus being baptized by John in the Jordan, which is kind of his public debut as not just another rabbi. And we've seen him gather up the first disciples, calling them to come and follow him, using gifts that they already had in their hands. And then last week, we heard Jesus warming up the crowd of disciples for the Sermon on the Mount, beginning with the Beatitudes, saying things like, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek." And on he goes, giving comfort to those who are feeling anything but blessed at that moment. So in this Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5 and 6 and 7, the disciples were his first audience. They were the original ears that his words were intended for. And so the verses that we're going to read today continue these themes of comfort and encouragement. And the fact is, if you were a disciple back in the days of Jesus, you could use all of the comfort and encouragement that you could get. Because life was not turning out the way they had hoped. Everything was upside down, and they weren't quite sure how to handle that. As Israelites, they have returned from exile, they're home again, but all the things they thought would happen once they came home weren't happening. They're back in their homeland, yes, but they're still occupied by the Roman Empire. So in a way, they're still in exile in their own place. Their land, their city, their temple, they're all being run by a non-Israelite government. So those prophetic promises of a divine Messiah and King, they still seem pretty far off in the distance somewhere. So they are in definite need of some comfort and encouragement, as well as some clues as to who this Jesus is and what his relation to the Jewish Torah, the law, is all about. So Matthew's Jesus begins with these words of encouragement and guidance in chapter 5. I'll be reading verses 13 through 20. "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its taste, how can the saltiness be restored? Because salt isn't good for anything, but it is thrown out and trampled underfoot." And then he says, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, turns it on and puts it under a bushel basket, but on the lampstand, it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." Then he shares these words of explanation and guidance. He says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, because I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of these commandments and who teaches others to do the same will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So the big question on the mind of the Israelites in Jesus' day, back before there was even a church, is this. Well, what are we supposed to do now? Things are not turning out the way they expected. The promises God gave them, they don't seem to be coming true. So what does that mean? Does that mean God has abandoned us? Things aren't going according to our plan. What are we supposed to do now? And as good leaders in any group are wont to do, the religious leaders from the synagogues, they have provided several options for the Israelites, several answers to their question. The Sadducees, well, they thought if you can't beat them, you might as well join them. So, collaboration with the occupying forces was the answer for them. Now, the Zealots, on the other hand, they thought Israel should take up arms and fight against the empire. And then there were the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were kind of a divided house on this issue. Some of the Pharisees agreed with the stand and fight mentality. But others of them, well, they kind of thought and advocated for the exact opposite to happen. They knew that a small Jewish nation was no match for the vast military resources of the empire. So they decided to make like a turtle and hide in their shells, withdrawing from the world and burying their heads in the sands of study and practice of the law of Torah. I guess they figured if they couldn't win political independence, they might as well preserve and protect their cultural and religious identity by doing nothing except waiting for this Messiah to come again. So this is the tense and very uncertain situation that Jesus is speaking into in these words from the Sermon on the Mount. Israel is looking for guidance, and they don't really like what they're hearing from their religious leaders. So they look to Jesus for an answer. So we know already, I think, that Jesus wouldn't be a fan of the Zealots' stance about standing and fighting. Because what does Jesus think we should do for our enemies? Pray for them and forgive them. So standing and fighting, probably not what his answer would be. And he wouldn't really be a fan of what the Sadducees were doing about just sort of, if you can't beat them, join them, because Israel was called to be a holy people set apart. They're not supposed to just be one of the crowd. And Jesus says that in order to enter the kingdom of heaven, one's righteousness must exceed the level of righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And that means that no matter how much they withdraw, no matter how much they study and practice Torah, it still isn't going to be good enough for the kingdom of heaven. So that option is out as well. So what then is Israel now to do as people whose lives are just not turning out like they thought they would? Well, Matthew, the gospel writer, concludes that in Jesus, this Jewish rabbi, God is doing a new thing for Israel. In Jesus Christ, the Messiah has come, and the promises are now being fulfilled. God's reign has broken through from heaven to earth and has begun. In these words from Matthew 5, Jesus' guidance to Israel is just to be Israel, to be God's chosen people, to be light, to be salt, to be a holy nation, to be the people that God has called them to be, but to do it in a new way, by following the Messiah, the Son of God and the Son of Man, who came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. In his ministry, Jesus intends to extend the mission of God, expanding what it means to be the people of God, not just to Jews, but to Gentiles as well. So Jesus commends the people in this uncertain and tense situation to let their light shine, living in the empire, but not as part of the empire. God didn't create them to give in and withdraw and hide their light, but God calls them to be a light, to reflect God's light into the darkness. Not to expose or to judge, but to be a guide. Like a lighthouse whose lowered lights be burning, shining brightly from the shore in the midst of a storm. And Jesus commends the people to be salt, to make what is bland come alive, to live out their faith with a little extra zest, a little extra flavor, and to make others thirsty for the kingdom of heaven. So if you think about it, we have Jesus originally giving these words to people in his day, speaking into their tense and uncertain situation. And then Matthew writes down his gospel a generation or two later, after Jesus' death and resurrection. So as he's retelling the story of the Sermon on the Mount, he's speaking to another audience whose lives haven't turned out the way they thought they would either, because they were expecting Jesus to come back soon and very soon, like tomorrow. And it just wasn't happening either. I suspect that many folks in North American churches today have this same angst. They feel like they're in a similar tense and uncertain situation, the same as in Jesus' day and the same as in Matthew's day. I suspect, even if you haven't said it outside of your house, you have probably said it to those around you, that life just isn't the way it used to be. Nothing's going according to our plan. The future of the church in general seems very uncertain. We don't know how to handle that. So, like the Israelites in Jesus' day, and like Matthew's readers, we too wonder, what are we supposed to do now? How are we supposed to live? And I think Jesus would give us the same answer that he gave to those first disciples. Be salt and be light. Now, you may be saying to yourself, well, Pastor Allison, that's all fine and dandy for you to stand up there and say, be salt and be light, but how? How exactly am I supposed to be salt and light? Well, by now, you should know I really like asking questions. And sometimes I give you the answers, and sometimes I don't. And this morning is one of those times where I'm not going to give you the answer to that question, because I think there are actually many answers. Besides, it makes for a much more interesting discussion in Sunday school class when I don't tell you what the answers are. Because here's the thing. If you were to ask Isaiah, what does it mean to be salt and light? He would say, loose the bonds of injustice. Share your bread with the hungry. When you see the naked, cover them. Then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. And if you were to ask Paul, what does it mean to be salt and to be light? He would say, decide to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And if you ask the authors of Slow Church, the book that we're reading jointly with First Pres, I think they would say it's a little bit of Isaiah and a little bit of Paul together. But I think they would take the question of being salt and light one step further. And they would ask us this. For whom are we called to be salt and light? To what people? What place? What neighborhood has God called us to be salt and light? What kind of salt and light do our neighbors here in our neighborhood need us to be? So maybe that's the place to start from, thinking about how we are to be salt and light for our world. I was trying to think of some homework to give you this week, some little thing that you could do that might help you think more about how God has particularly gifted you to be salt and to be light in our world. But then as I thought about it, I thought, I think you already know. I think you already have an inkling about how God has gifted you to be salt and light, even if maybe we don't like to talk about it because it kind of feels like bragging. I think you probably already know the gifts God has given to you. So your homework today, on your way to lunch or the grocery store or on your way home, wherever you're going next, your homework is to drive around our neighborhood a little more slowly than you normally do. Maybe take the long way home. And as you drive, really look and see not only where God might be calling us to be salt and light, but to look for the places where God's salt and light already are. Places where maybe we can join in on something God is already doing in our neighborhood. Now, I know exactly what's going to happen, because I've already thought about it. We will drive around, and we will begin to lament. We will lament what is gone and how much things have changed, all for the worse, in our opinions. We will begin to lament just like the disciples did, and just like the people in Matthew's day did, because life has changed, and they don't know how they're supposed to live. But I want you to fight. I want you to fight against that urge. Because there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. So as you're out driving around the neighborhood, look for the cracks where God's light is already shining in the darkness. And remember this. Maybe above all else, if you don't remember anything else from the sermon today, remember this. God will be as faithful to us today as he was to the people in Jesus' day, and as he was to the people in Matthew's day. God will be faithful to us just as he has been faithful to each and every other generation of the church. He will never leave you and never forsake you. So do not be afraid to be salt and light, or to look for salt and light. But be of good courage and know that you are loved and that God will be faithful when we are salt and light for our world. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.